Persistent aches and pains plague nearly one-fifth, or 20% of adults in the United States, according to a National Health Interview Survey. But victims can learn to identify the culprits of their pain from reading their body's cues. But when people try to ignore or power through their pain, they teach their brain to get good at being in pain, warns our author today, Yaling Liu. She says that this is how chronic pain sets in, and targeting the situations that cause pain allows victims to take back control. Dr. Yaling Liu is a seasoned doctor of chiropractic and a teacher whose unique perspective on healthcare formed from her exposure to generations of Eastern as well as Western medicine is going to talk with her today. Her new book is called Everybody's Guide to Everyday Pain. And so it's our delight to have Dr. Liu on the program today to talk to us about pain. Hi, Yaling. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much for having me, Lynn.
How many years have you been working in pain?
Oh, well, I've been working with patients since 94, just over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
Yeah, you know, and I keep learning because everybody's different and we're all a big puzzle, which mm-hmm. I love. That's what keeps me going. I love a good puzzle.
Well, the intro said that 20% of people have problems with pain. I think it's much higher than that.
I think you're right. I think that there's a lot that goes unreported because of that tendency of ours to deny ourselves time to wallow in pain or to recognize it.
Okay, well, pain, and especially back pain, can be caused by three things, as you talk about: mechanical stresses, chemical stresses, and emotional stresses. Would you hit each one of those for us?
Sure. The mechanical stressors can be very surprising. I think that's the important place to start. Very often we get a lot of information from just asking ourselves, what was I doing when the pain started? And if we look at what our position was, what our activity was, we can start to understand better that there are some regular everyday things we do that are stressful on the body as a structure. And once we understand that a little bit better, it doesn't seem so out of this world or so ominous to imagine that, you know, doing a certain thing in a certain position for many years can eventually wear at us. So that's a really important part about dealing with our pain and de-escalating the stress behind the idea that we might be deteriorating. And so that sort of ties into the emotional aspects as well. Often there are mechanical triggers, but they're all influenced by emotional triggers, whether it's the stress we carry in response to the pain or if it's something stressful or transitional that was going on in our lives at the time that the pain set in. And the chemistry behind our pain is often also intimately intermingled with the emotional aspects of pain. The same chemicals in the brain that determine whether or not we sense pain, how much we become inflamed when we're in pain, all those same chemicals are also involved in regulating our moods and our emotions. And so one thing can feed the other, and it starts to become a chicken and egg situation. It becomes very difficult to separate the two if we allow it to go on for too long.
Right. Okay. You talk about the process of cooling the fire in your book. Tell us about that.
Well, when it comes down to it, all pain in the body, and really all disease, as you probably well know from your background in medicine, everything that we experience as dysfunction has some connection with inflammation. Inflammation is what happens in the body when we're trying to fix something. So the inflammatory process is actually a very good adaptive reaction to when things are not going quite right. Unfortunately, sometimes inflammation can build up and become overwhelming. It can overwhelm the system. That's when that happens when we don't remove the irritation that's causing the inflammation. And when that happens, that's when we start to experience pain, when the inflammation that's originally a good thing, when it becomes, goes out of control. Inflammation is very similar to the process of fire, combustion. So we know that fire is a very, it can be good at breaking things down, so we can eliminate waste. We burn things to break them down and get rid of them. We do the same thing with inflammation in the body. But if that fire gets out of control and we keep feeding it fuel, there's going to be a lot of nasty smoke and byproducts that are damaging, that are not good. Same thing in the body tissues. So what we want to do is find out, first of all, what's causing, what are we feeding the fire? What's adding to the coals? And then what we want to try to do is eliminate them and control the fire, cool it, find ways to douse that fire down so that we don't allow it to burn out of control or simmer out of control for too many years.
What are your tips on actually how to cool the fire?
Well, so that's the basis of the book.
No, you can't give the whole thing away. But
yeah, no. So some of the basic things is to start to understand what the causes are, and I try to walk the readers through investigating for themselves what their personal triggers are, and there are a lot of things to choose from. In the book, I give some diagrams and photos of things that can be troublesome and that can add to the fire of inflammation. But first off, when you're hit with pain, the very first thing you want to do is take out the major mechanical stressor, and that is to just lie your body down, decrease the amount of compression that's on the spine, take a break, put some ice, literally cooling the fire, put some ice on the area that hurts. And generally you'll find that just those two things will help give you a little bit of relief. And if you have a little bit of relief, you can feel comforted in the fact that you are able to control this pain. If you're doing something that helps decrease it, you know that it's not hopeless and there is hope.
Okay, so you recommend putting ice on the area. When is putting heat on the area good?
It's generally when pain first starts, even if it's a pain that you're familiar with. You can't go wrong by putting ice on it. The key is to not keep the ice on for too long. If you put heat on something that's hurting, it may feel good initially. It's very comforting to have heat on, but it will increase the pooling of the inflammatory fluids, which is part of what causes pain. So if you want to put heat on, it's also best not to keep it on for very long. I like to advise folks, and I like to do this myself, I like to put heat on the areas of the body that are usually compressed and tight and short, things like the front of so the belly, the chest. If you put heat on your belly and chest, you immediately create this opening, just relaxing kind of effect on all of the back muscles. And generally, if you're having pain on the back of the body, ice on the back of the body, heat on the front of the body. It's a very generalized kind of approach, but everybody's got a little bit of an individual nuance to that. That's just my preference.
Well, you talked about inflammatory fluid. Does that have anything to do with lymphatic drainage fluid?
It does. The lymph system in the body is akin to a sewage system. So it's the piping in our body that helps to carry out the garbage, and there is a sludge that helps to carry out the garbage in lymph, the lymph fluid. If we become inflamed, then the fluids in the tissues accumulate. They become a little bit more voluminous than we can accommodate, and the lymph gets really jam-packed with sewage. If the amount of inflammation going on in the area overwhelms the capabilities of that sewage lymph system in that area, then we have an overflow and it backs up and we start to experience the irritation from having the buildup of that sewage, the materials that we're, our body's trying to get rid of.
So is that the primary underlying thing that massage helps with?
It is a big part of what most body work will help with, and movement as well. Gentle movement is really important in moving the lymph out of the body, moving the garbage out. The way we experience eliminating garbage through our bowels and our bladder and through sweat is the way we can appreciate things are actually leaving the body. But it all starts at the cellular level in the lymph system, from the tissues to that lymphatic sewage system. It's from the lymph that we can push things into the kidneys and into the colon and really get rid of them. So yes, body work is great for that. The mechanical stimulation helps to kind of move that stuff on out. So massage, lymphatic drainage is a specific method of manual therapy that targets just the lymph movement, but massage will help push things along as well. Chiropractic can help in some ways as well at a deep level near the joints. And movement, taking a walk. That's part of why walking and gentle movement, even when you're in pain, is so important.
Right. Well, one thing that I was thinking about with respect to inflammation was that medical doctors like to push NSAID drugs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which have complications. What do you think about that kind of drug therapy?
Well, you know, it's out of my scope technically to be discussing medication too much in too much depth. I see a lot of people gain temporary relief from those kinds of medications like ibuprofen and naproxen, but I also see that it's temporary. And what it does is it has a place for us where we need to turn the pain off enough in order to regain function. In some cases, that makes sense, to break that chemical cycle of pain. Unfortunately, if we just cover up the pain and don't take steps towards remedying the triggers of that pain, that ends up taxing the system more than helping it, in my opinion.
And long-term use of those drugs can have other harmful side effects, too.
Exactly, right. We've learned through studies that all of those NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, do disrupt the body's natural enzyme production for the enzymes that help our own natural healing process. We need those enzymes in order to be able to take care of inflammation in the body. And so there's a little bit of a give and take, plus and minus. You have to weigh a lot of different things. And it's important to be sure to realize that it's not a long-term option, because you are putting your body at risk. There are a lot of cardiovascular risks and GI risks, discomfort. If you're not able to eliminate well, you don't help your body get better, and some of those medications do cause constipation.
Right. Well, in addition to the cooling the fire, which we've talked about, you talk about fireproofing the body. What does that mean?
Some of what that is going to be to avoid triggers, learn how to read your body's signals before it turns into pain. And avoiding triggers is a really big part of it. So arming yourself with things chemically, mechanically, emotionally that make you less vulnerable to the triggers. For example, with the chemical triggers, often just decreasing your own natural toxin load can really bolster you against any kind of offending agent. So, for example, our chemistry becomes taxed if we're exposed to a lot of environmental triggers. For some people, that's allergens, pollen in the air. For some others, it may be food triggers. I want to say food allergies, but that's a whole topic on its own. It's not exactly that everybody's allergic to certain foods. It's that we can sometimes react to foods that the body doesn't recognize as easily assimilable, and that can cause a stress in the body chemically. So if we can avoid the things that trigger us, and some of that will require help from physicians to really do the testing needed to find out what is your trigger and help guide you through that investigative process. Avoiding those chemical triggers can really help decrease your load of toxins, and it'll make you able to handle more inadvertent garbage in your environment without reacting right away. Mechanically, to buffer yourself, what you want to do is strengthen your body. So finding out what your weak spots are and working on building strength and reconnecting your brain to those areas mechanically so that you can be stronger, literally and figuratively.
Now, Ling, tell the audience how to get a copy of your book. I thought it was a really good book, especially the pictures and photographs that you have in there are exceptional as far as trying to get a person to understand the whole concept.
Oh, I really appreciate that perspective, Wynn. That's very nice to hear. It was really my intention to help people like myself learn through the visual aspects. I really, I think that's an important piece. And to get my book, you can go to Amazon and put in the title of the book, Every Body's Guide to Everyday Pain, and you'll find that available in Kindle and in paperback right now. You can also go to my website, stopeverydaypain.com, where you can connect with me in a variety of ways on social media, and you'll see a link as well to purchase the book there. That should do it. I'm also on Facebook.
Okay. I think we ought to say that your artist was Sandy Johnson
yes.
for the really good work that she's done in the book. Now I'm looking at your media kit, and there's a segment here on taking back control of your chronic pain, and I understand that we probably talked about some of these five steps to get your pain under control, but maybe you might have something else that you might want to say. First step, ask yourself, what am I doing when I notice the pain was bothering me the most?
That is the very first step. That's probably the most important. And as I just alluded to briefly, I think the real underlying benefit to asking ourselves and stopping in our tracks to find out what's really going on is to remind ourselves, to reassure ourselves that most of this kind of pain, the everyday variety, the kind of pain that's not related to an underlying disease, the kind that we just wake up with one morning from sleeping oddly, that what I find helps patients get better is learning that this is not a scary pain, that we have control over it. And so when we find out what's causing it, what are we doing to add to it, it empowers us, it takes the stress out of it, it de-escalates it to a place where we can deal with it and get better faster. So it's really about learning that we do have control, we can do something, even if it's just a little bit, to decrease the intensity of the pain temporarily. That should be a reminder that not all hope is lost. And that's really the piece that I think will carry a lot of us through these little glitches in our days, the tweaks and occasional everyday pain.
Yeah, I remember back 25 years ago, I was doing strenuous physical activity, and the next morning I woke up with sciatic pain, which persisted for 20 years till I got surgery on the thing. And so I know that it's good to figure out what caused it, but sometimes it's not terribly helpful, I don't think. Okay, mm-hmm. Your second point, do baby yourself, don't suck it up, buttercup, is what you said.
Yeah, well, too many of us, I think there's an overwhelming desire to seem tough on the outside and not seem vulnerable, and unfortunately that does cause a lot of us to push the pain into the background until it becomes a five-alarm fire. And when it's a five-alarm fire, it's possible that it may be too late to implement a lot of the early steps that I'm talking about in my book. And that's okay if that's where we end up, but it's all a learning process. But yes, what I'm hoping to help people avoid is that five-alarm fire where surgery becomes necessary. And that all has its good place, but I think a lot of it can be changed, avoided, you know, if it's caught early enough. The problem is just knowing what to pay attention to and when to pay attention. That's the tricky part.
Well, since I have a background in medicine, I can say this and be on reasonably certain ground. Medical doctors, to a large extent, use narcotic pain relievers to take care of pain problems, and unlike Yaling's way of dealing with them, have serious side effects, are addicting people in massive numbers to narcotics. So, I don't know the exact answer for that as far as that treatment modality goes. I do know the answer for addiction, and you can get a free copy of my book, Freedom from Addiction, if you want to email me and ask for it, which will give you some insight on what really causes addiction and how you can treat that. But I just wanted you to understand that the perspective that Yaling is coming from and the perspective that your average medical doctor that's treating the same kind of pain are not the same perspectives. Do you agree?
I do. Your book sounds like it's a very important piece in the puzzle to getting better, being well, and really living life at a higher level of quality.
Right. Well, let's go on to number three. Track what time of the day that you feel the worst.
Yeah, you know, that gives us a little bit of information about whether or not your pain is primarily inflammatory or if it's primarily a struggle with gravity, frankly. If you wake up with pain, very likely what's happening is that the immobility throughout the night is leading you to suffer from the accumulation of inflammatory fluids, so inflammation may be the primary piece of that. Now, there are lots of other factors to consider, but that's sort of that's an overgeneralization, but it gives us some clue as to what to look at. Of course, we already know inflammation is a big part of pain, but if you do wake up with pain, it means that maybe inflammation is more of a big deal for you than it might be for someone who has more pain at the end of the day. If you're having more pain by the end of your day, it means that your muscles and your structure is struggling to deal with the stresses, the mechanical stresses of the day. And that gives you a little more insight into what may need to happen there, which is probably more along the lines of reprogramming the body to move more efficiently, to be stronger, to just reevaluate what you might be doing during the day in terms of your positioning. So that might be a more active role you'd have to take in dealing with that mechanics.
And I think that pain at the end of the day is quite often related to osteoarthritis or just getting old and our bodies wearing out.
Right. And I'm a little resistant to the idea of pain just being because of age, but you're right. There's definitely an age component to it, and hopefully it's more of a tissue aging rather than a chronological aging, because I think we can all be at different ages if you know what I mean.
I'd love to be 80 and have no pain at the end.
Yeah, that would be something else.
Okay.
But you're right.
So
we certainly have a limitation to matter.
We got to speed up now because we're closing in on the end of the time that we have. Consider
sure.
Recent changes in digestion.
So digestion is a fairly important piece of managing our chemical triggers. And if we can optimize how well we break down our foodstuffs and how well we break down anything else that comes in through our mucous membranes, that's going to be an advantage when we're looking at the chemical stressors in our lives that can add to inflammation.
Okay. Fifth point, don't forget to gauge your emotional stress levels. We talked about that. You can read more about it when you buy the book. we're getting ready to be in our last minute. And so, Yaling, I want you to tell everybody that's listening, what is your mission or purpose in life?
I really want to share with people that information is at our fingertips, and we really have the ultimate power in helping ourselves be better, live better, feel better. I want to be able to share that information and show that people we can, it's at our fingertips. We all know instinctually what's right for us, and we just need a little bit of guidance along the way.
Well, that's a great mission, and I hope you're the best with being able to get the word out to the world. Everybody's Guide to Everyday Pain, a great book. Yaling Liu, and pick it up, read it, look at the pictures, look at the photographs. It'll help you a lot. Thanks so much for being on the program today, Yaling. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for your hospitality, Wynn. I appreciate it.